Hello all, it's Devorah Krasniansky here at ADEAD. And ADEAD was started for the success of marriage. And to that end, we have many resources and materials for pre-dating, dating, engagement, and marriage. And recently we got a grant from the City of New York to address domestic abuse. So if you check out our website, you'll see some materials for that as well. Not to say that that is equally happening in our community. It's just that if we have that funding, we have to address that issue. It is happening though. Okay. Tonight's talk is for husbands with Rabbi Chais Taub. And once again, I'm very thankful for him that he's able to give us from his time and his wisdom and expertise and for talking to husbands in this time of corona. This, like I said, this talk is for the husbands and for women listening in. It's really not for you. And this talk is in memory of my cousin, Rabbi Usher Heber. Tonight is his shleishim. And he was a good husband. He was a good husband. So, I want to just continue this conversation that we started last week with Rabbi Taub about the role of the husband. And Rabbi Taub?
Yeah.
Okay. So last week you mentioned that the husband is like a guest in his wife's home. Can you just quickly bring that back up? Because some of the questions that came in over the week, we talk about that a little bit. And so just in very short, right. What do you mean by that?
Right. Okay. Well, we spoke about it for a long time last week, so I'm not sure I can say it any differently than I did last week, but just to...
In one line this week.
In one line?
Yeah.
Respect the fact that if it comes down to the husband or the wife, when you're at home, she's the one who is establishing the rhythm and the tone of what goes on. Therefore, you should be in a supportive role, not a lead role. That's it.
Okay. Yes, that was a very quick summary of that. Okay, so last week we spoke about a lot of different things, and questions came in over the week when we mentioned that we were going to have a part two. So I wanted to just jump into those questions. So a first question. Now that I'm spending so much more time at home, I'm seeing things in my wife that I really don't like. I try to hold back from saying anything, but sometimes I blurt it out, and then I feel bad. So I'm not sure what he's seeing. So I added a few elements to this. Is he seeing something on the personality or how she's raising the kids or halacha and hashkafa? And if you could address all three of those, in one or three separate things, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so first of all, let me just say that there's no real problem here in that question. I mean, that question doesn't really doesn't refer to any real problems, meaning things that need to be solved, other than the thing that he himself admits is a problem, which is blurting out criticism, which he feels bad about immediately after, which means that he knows that it's a problem. So the solution to that is stop doing that. Stop blurting it out. always the response is, well, I couldn't help myself. Well, you know, if you get in a fender bender and you're driving and some crazy guy gets out of the car, road raging, and some guy twice your size who's foaming at the mouth, you know, so then you're not blurting out insults or criticism. You're so all of a sudden now you can help yourself, right? What I'm saying is, I can't help myself. I could, you can help yourself. Just think to yourself, I don't want to say anything critical because there's no point. It's just hurtful. And if something actually does have to be addressed, it should be done in a respectful conversation. So, yeah. But the person who wrote that question has enough self-awareness that I'm not really too concerned, because obviously the fact that they asked the question in the way that they did means that they know it's a problem. So, great. I'll give you the little bit of encouragement that you need. You don't need that much encouragement because you're 99% of the way there. Just yeah, stop making those comments. Now, regarding the issue of noticing things that he doesn't like, that's not a problem. First of all, nothing has changed. Whatever you're noticing now has been going on for a long time. You just haven't noticed it. So really, the mitzias, the actual fact of the matter, reality has not changed at all. So really, the only thing that's changed is you become aware of it, which means that you're annoyed by it. In other words, if there would be no corona, you could have gone the rest of your life without noticing these things, and they would have gone unaddressed. So, you know, in theory, you could have gone the rest of your life not dealing with these things. So now the only thing is, you know about these things, and they annoy you. Okay. Now, let me redact my words. They annoy you is maybe too trivial a word for some of the scenarios that you put forth. Okay. If it's personality issues, then I'm okay with using the word they annoy you. Meaning, if somebody's personality gets on your nerves, deal with it. Especially, you know, you've invested in being married to this person, building a life, building a home. You know, deal with it. But you posed a few different alternative scenarios, what the troubling issues could be. So I think the first one he said was personality. I think the last one he said was hashgacha. I don't even remember. Could you repeat the different possible issues?
So I said personality, the chinuch, the way the children.
Oh, chinuch, okay.
And halacha hashgacha.
Okay, fine. Well, chinuch and halacha hashgacha are almost the same, except I guess you're separating them because I guess if you're saying hashgacha is distinct from chinuch, is the stuff that only affects yourself, not, you know, how.
Well, I just want to just break chinuch, not sure. only the Yiddishkeit chinuch, but, you know, like parenting styles and things like that. Being too lax or too strict or.
Right, right. So that's. Those things, let's actually take both of those together. The chinuch stuff and the hashkafa stuff, basically Yiddishkeit, the values, let's call it values, standards. Those are issues that come up all the time in a marriage. And, okay, so you were lucky or unlucky, however you want to put it, that until now you didn't realize this was going on. But like I said before, none of this is new. None of this started while you were being home so often. You just took notice of it now. Okay, fine. So this is what co-parents communicate about. This is precisely what we communicate about. We talk about matters of standards and values, and that's just something you're going to have to talk to her about. If it's something that bothers you on a personal level, like I was saying before, you know, if it's a personality thing or just something that's really, I don't know, she serves challah with raisins in it, you know, whatever. Just get over it. Get over it, okay? But, I don't know, maybe to some people challah with raisins in it could be a hashkafa issue. So, I don't know. But if it's something that bothers you personally, yeah, just really let it go. If it's something you're concerned is an issue of values in the home or standards in the home, then you're going to have to discuss that with your wife. And I will give you advice that is not specific to husbands, although much of the advice tonight is gender specific, which is why thank you, by the way, for telling women they should not be on this call, because it's actually not going to help them. It's not productive for them to be on this call. Even if they hear anything I say to husbands that is mechayiv husbands, meaning it puts the onus of responsibility on a husband, and a woman hears that, you know, even if she thinks that she's not keeping score, subconsciously, yes, it will. It does do damage. So if you're a woman, you're listening right now, it's not going to help you, Shalom Bias, to listen to this. It's just going to make you distracted by what you think your husband needs to be doing. What? And now all of a sudden you're seeing like half the calls just hung up?
Oh,
What?
Just one. Just one.
100 calls just ended. Okay, fine. But yeah, seriously, it's not helpful for us to be able to keep the other person's scorecard. You have to keep your own scorecard. It's not only is it the menschlich thing to do, you know, keep your side of the street clean, but it's for the sake of your own sanity. You're only going to make yourself miserable and crazy looking into what the other person has to do. Okay. Anyways, that was an aside. This advice is not gender specific. I would say this to women just as much as I would say to men. And that is, you know, the whole parsha in Torah about the Ben Seira Meira. And, you know, we think of it as a story about a rebellious kid, but it's actually not. It's a story about failed parents. The story starts off and says, in other words, when a man, a husband, a father, will have a stubborn, rebellious son. So the stories are not even about the son. It's about the parent of the son. And then it tells how the parent actually causes him to become stubborn and rebellious. I'm not going to go through a whole thing. Actually, in God of Our Understanding, which is a book that I wrote many years ago, I did a whole chapter just on that section. But I'll just bring out one point there. So it says that he has a Ben Seira Meira, a stubborn rebellious son, and then a Shemeya El Kol Aviv El Kol Imai. He does not listen to the voice of his father or to his mother, or the voice of his mother. So the question is, why doesn't it say Kol Aviv Imai? One time Kol, the voice of his father and mother. It says Kol Aviv Kol Imai, the voice of his father, the voice of his mother. And then later on, in fact, when the parents bring the son to the Zikne Ha'ir, they say, B'neinu Zeh, this son of ours, then Shemei L'Kaleinu, he doesn't listen to our voice. Kaleinu, our voice, collective, plural. Which is not what we heard at the beginning of the story, when Torah, in fact, is made, it testifies to the fact that there is no koleno, there's no collective voice of the parents. There's a koel aviv and there's a koel imai. So what does that mean? That means that one of the worst things that you can do to your child, and actually almost begs them to rebel, is to have double standards, to have two different standards, a voice of the father and a voice of the mother. And that is so important that I would say that it is better to have a lower standard of Yiddishkeit and Siddishkeit that you can both agree on than to have two different parents enforcing two different levels. And this is not just for Shalom Bayis' sake. This is for Chinuch's sake. This being on the same page with each other is not just so that you're at peace with one another, but so that your child will have clarity and stability. When they don't have this, then, like I said, it's almost begging a child to rebel when that happens. So to sum it up, I would say if you're noticing things that are of a chinuch nature or of a hashkafa nature, please have a respectful discussion about it in a non-accusatory fashion. You know, ask questions, not interrogation, but questions, like, you know, be open to hear something. Because, again, you know, going back to what we started off with, you're a guest in the home, I don't want to be misunderstood when I say that. You know, I'm not literally saying you're a guest, like, you know, you should be paying rent or something. It's a shame I'm mushel. I don't literally mean a guest, but I mean, if it helps to make the point, then that's why I'm using the term a guest. Remember, husbands, men, there may be things your wife is doing chinuch-wise with the kids that you think is lax or it's an oversight or it's lazy or it's wrong, and you might not realize that it's actually the best possible way to deal with things. And it might just be because you're just not privy to enough information to realize what she's tried before. You might not actually understand what the needs of this child might be. Let me set it forth as a logical argument. This questioner said he didn't notice a whole bunch of stuff until he was home all the time. Okay. So just like there was a whole bunch of stuff that you didn't even realize was going on in your home until you were at home all the time, it's possible that if you would stick around even longer, you would notice a whole bunch of stuff. It would make you come to the same conclusions that your wife already has come to. Let me just say that again, because I just want to make sure that logic is clear. You might see something that looks funny, ridiculous, it might even look negligent. Why is she doing it this way? This is not the way to do it. And maybe theoretically on paper, you're right, that's not the way to do it. But in reality, it is the best way to do it. And the difference between you and her might just be that she has more information about facts on the ground. And the proof that that's possibly very well the situation is you just noticed stuff that's going on in the house yesterday. So clearly, you have less information about the facts on the ground than she does. So when you have that conversation, be open to learning something. When you ask a question, you don't interrogate. You know, when the cops say, you've been drinking tonight? Where you been? Yeah. You know, that's not that's not an innocent question. That's an accusatory question, right? You have anything in the car that I wouldn't want to find? Yeah. Like, that's called condescending, and it makes people unappreciative of your question. It makes them not want to be cooperative. So don't do that. Don't be like a cop asking questions. Be inquisitive. Inquisitive means that I'm interested to possibly learn something. I can say, no, there's no way I could learn something. Yes, you could. And what's the proof? You just noticed a whole bunch of stuff that's been going on in your house for who knows how long. And you didn't know about it until now. So there's obviously a lot of room for you to learn some stuff about your own kids and about your own family. And so be open to that. And maybe you'll find out that your wife has actually arrived already at the best possible solution. Now, maybe there's something she overlooked. And great, so you could offer it to her as a suggestion. And that's great. And maybe you're having been home and noticing things and being then prompted to bring these things up and have a conversation with her. Maybe that will actually even end up improving the way things are done. But don't assume that she's wrong. Assume that she's right and that you just want to understand why she does things differently than you do. Okay, is enough about that?
I think so. Okay, another question. Thank you for that. My wife and I have nothing to talk about to each other.
You see why I wouldn't want a woman to hear that?
Yeah.
Because then she's going to walk around thinking everything she does is 100% right, and her husband just doesn't realize it. And that's not for her to know that. It's not for her to know. It's for the husband to swallow that bitter pill. And it's not for her to know that. Okay, yeah.
This question. My wife and I have nothing to talk about. I'm bored. Starting to think I married the wrong person. We said that we're not going to talk about Corona, but that's really the only thing on my mind.
Okay. So first of all, there's a premise in that question that if you don't have anything to talk about, then you married the wrong person. I challenge your premise because I don't believe the purpose of marriage is conversations. Not even if you're looking at it as a simon. I understand. Maybe you don't look at the compatibility in conversations. Maybe you're not saying that that is a core thing that a marriage needs, but maybe you're saying it's a secondary characteristic, or it's a simon, it's a sign that the relationship is good. I'm saying it's not. And so let's throw that out, okay? That's not a sign that you married the wrong person. But let's talk about something else in that question, which is that this person clearly has a need to talk about Corona. And he wants to be able to do that. Now, he said, we said we're not going to talk about corona. Okay, so my first question would be, who made that rule? It is possible that he himself made that rule. That sometimes, you know, sometimes we make rules that work against us, right? And it's possible he himself made the rule, let's not talk about corona, and then realizes that he actually does want to talk about it. So repeal that, you know, you can repeal the amendment. If she made the rule, then I think you need to have a conversation. You say, I have nothing to talk about? Okay, I'm giving you something right now to talk about, which is, hey, you said let's not talk about corona. I have a really strong need to talk about it. And that itself is a conversation. Like, why do you have this need to talk about it? I would say also that when a person says, I have a need to talk about corona, why? Are you working on a vaccine? What he means, I am making fun, but I'm making fun of human nature, not of this person's question. And we can make fun of human nature because we're all in the same boat. You don't mean I need to talk about corona. I mean, like I said, you're not working on a vaccine. What you mean is you need to talk about your feelings about what's going on right now because of the whole corona situation. That's what you mean. You don't really want to talk about the virus. I'm assuming you don't even want to talk about current events and how, you know, is Trump doing a good job? Is de Blasio doing a good job? I don't think that's what you really... Okay, maybe you do. Maybe you want to just talk about current events with your wife. That's possible. And if you do, so ask her to do that. But I think what the person means is that they have a lot of feelings about, you know, we spoke about last week how this is affecting us as far as Parnassa. That was a long discussion we had last week. How it's just you could have fears associated with it. Maybe you're scared. Maybe you're scared about your health. Maybe you're scared about people that you love. Okay, so if you have a need to discuss those things, then you're going to have to discuss them with somebody. You're going to have to discuss them with somebody. I would suggest you to try to talk with your wife about it, and your answer why you can't is because you made a rule that you're not going to talk about it. So I'm saying if you made that rule, so break that rule. And if she made that rule, discuss with her the fact that rule is not working for you.
I actually understood the question differently.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I understood the question more from the I'm bored. We don't want to talk about corona. We both agree that, and then we have nothing else to talk about. Did I marry the wrong person?
Well, you're not bored. You're boring.
Okay.
What do you mean you have nothing else to talk about? Whose problem is that? I'm sitting here with somebody and there's nothing interesting to talk about. By the way, again, I'm not picking on this questioner, although I sound like I am. That's a realization I came to about myself. I should probably be a little bit more transparent when I say these things. I realized that there's no such thing as being bored, that I'm never bored, I'm boring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm not bored, I'm boring. So you're saying there's nothing to talk about. Okay, well, she's not boring. The world's not boring. I mean, the Abish is creating the world every single second. It's certainly not boring. What you mean is that you're boring yourself. You have nothing interesting to talk about, if that's indeed what the question means. So then even more so am I challenging not only the premise of the question that if we have nothing to talk about, then I married the wrong person. Now I'm challenging even the fact. You understand the two different things. There's the data and there's the conclusion. So I'm saying even if the data were true that she's boring and we can't have a conversation, I'm saying even if those are the facts, the conclusion doesn't mean you married the wrong person because that's not what marriage is. But now I'm even questioning the facts. He's saying we have nothing to talk about. What do you mean you have nothing to talk about? Why is that suddenly completely her problem? So that's why I would rather assume, like I was assuming before, that the person does want to talk about it, and his hands are tied because that conversation was supposed to be taken off the table. So I'm saying put it back on the table.
Mm-hmm. Good answers to both possibilities of that question. Thank you.
Yeah.
My wife never wants to be a full-time mother. Sorry about that. She's overwhelmed and feeling unfulfilled. What can I say to her? I kind of understand her, but this is our temporary reality, and she is so angry about having to take care of our kids all day. Yes, I help, and they are hard kids. But what can I say to her?
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's a tough question. Well, first of all, I'm glad the questioner has that much awareness, that he knows his wife's personality and what she wants out of life. All I can say is that there's no trick of how to deal with that. It's just about being supportive and being compassionate and, you know, acknowledging to her, obviously never, ever, 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 let me say one more time, ever in front of the children. You understand that that would be emotional murder, correct? Let's make sure everyone understands. If your children ever hear you say, you know, Mommy, we know that you never wanted to be a full-time mother, so that's called emotional murder if your child ever hears that. I just want to make sure that that's clear. And in case anybody just picked up the phone didn't hear that, yeah, that's called emotional murder if your child ever hears that either parent is less than 110% excited and interested in being a mommy or a tati. So let's just make sure that's very clear. But in private, when you have your mommy and tati time, you know, the other day I got a call, a WhatsApp video call from a couple, and I see they're sitting in the car. And I laughed and I said to them, oh, so we're going to talk about your kids because you're sitting in the car. So that's the corona reality, right? Okay, fine. So, yes, you may have to go with your wife and go sit out in the car. By the way, make it nice. You know, put a bottle of seltzer in the fridge and get a couple glasses, nice glasses. You know, do the dishes too, you know. Get a couple clean glasses, some napkins, I don't know, a wedge of lime.
Lime.
And yeah, of course. The ladies love the lime wedges. Yeah, of course. Anyways, so, no, but I'm serious. I'm not even joking. Did you say, let's go, yeah, for sure, let's go out. You know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever it is, you go sit in the car, and you have your seltzer, and just, you know, hang out with her. And that would be, one of the things you would mention there is just, you know, what can you do for her? Other than the fact he said he's already trying to be as helpful as he can in the home, which obviously, you know, that's first and foremost. Try to be supportive, try to be helpful, and mice of the poil, actual helpfulness, like, you know, doing things that help with running the house. But also emotional support. Obviously, if you're emotionally supportive and you're not practically supportive, then it's actually worse than not being emotionally supportive. You know that? Yeah. Somebody who
can you extrapolate on that fandom?
Yeah, well, you know, it's like the old Yiddish joke about the schnorrer comes to the house, the balabasta answers the door, and he says to her, you know, I'm really hungry, so she says, okay, fine, come on in, and she puts food out, and he's eating, and the guy's fressing away at the white bread, and there's black bread on the table as well, so she says, you know, the white bread is a lot more expensive than the black bread. She's trying to hint to him, you know, that he's like eating all the white bread. He could be eating some of the black bread. He says, yeah, but it's worth it. It's worth it. The white bread, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it. It's worth it. Okay, fine. So what I'm saying is being emotionally clueless, yeah. Don't try to commiserate and have compassion, you know. Yeah, I know that white bread sure is expensive. Yeah, well, you're eating my white bread. I'm paying for it. You didn't pay anything for it. I don't need your commiseration. I don't need you to relate to my plight and to sympathize. I don't need your empathy. You know, I told you stop eating the white bread. So first and foremost is be helpful. Hamaisa hu ha'ikar, right? It's like we learn in Tanya that of course kavona is like wings for the mitzvah. But if you don't have the mitzvah, if you don't have the maisa, then even all the kavana in the world is worthless. Kavana without a mitzvah is nothing. A bird without wings is kosher. Wings without a bird is not kosher at all. So, first thing is be helpful. And that's what the questioner said. He said that he tries to help out, so that's good. Once you're already doing that, then being emotionally supportive or compassionate, empathetic, that's very important as well. That's all I was saying. Is if you're not helping and instead you want to be empathetic, it's just annoying. It's like better don't even be empathetic. But if you are helping, then yeah, so add some empathy to that. And there's nothing you can really do. I mean, what are you supposed to tell her? You know, like, I mean, God forbid, like, she shouldn't be a mother. I mean, and it's an issue that's bigger than he can fix. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's an existential issue. And her role as a parent and as a woman, and, you know, that's way above a husband's pay grade to figure that one out. I'll make that clear. If your wife has, like, a major issue in life about her role in life or her role as a woman or any of this major big stuff, you could be supportive and empathetic. Don't try to fix it for her because it's just way bigger than a person can fix. I mean, that's a thing for a rabbi. Only a rabbi can really compassionately and helpfully respond to something that big. But what a husband can do, you can be empathetic. You can say, do it by way of a compliment, by way of acknowledgement. You know, I'm impressed. I'm very, I don't know, I don't know how to say it in a nice way. I'm impressed, or I admire how much work you put in to giving the children the warmth and support and love. And I know that that's not your preferred shlichus in life, and there are other things, you know, the other aspirations you have, and just, you know, I think it's remarkable, and I admire it. Something like that. Okay, you're not fixing the problem for her, but you can't fix the problem for her. But what you're doing is at least you're showing some compassion, and you know, that's worth something. Okay.
Okay. Last time we spoke a lot about it was a mix, yeah. Woman not wanting to go to the mikvah, not wanting physical intimacy, and some questions came in on that topic. And I think they need a little clarification or restating in different words for different listeners.
Okay, and before we go into this topic, you know, last week I said that I don't really even want to get into this, and this is not something for a group call. And really, this is a one-on-one thing with your Rav. To say this again, I think last week I said more than I wanted to say, but you know, retroactively, I'm glad that I did. But I hope you won't take this as a cop-out. I'm telling you ahead of time, I may just tell you that I'm not going to be able to respond to these questions at all. But let's hear it. Let's see what we can.
So the question is, how is the husband going to be able to be warm and loving as she needs, but when he can't help but feel hurt by her decision?
You know, I hear you. I hear you. That's what we were talking about last week. That's what we were talking about. You know, being the man, that means... Look, I'm going to say some harsh stuff, and that's why I'm going to repeat again, no women better be on this call, and if they are on the call, if you're listening to a recording of this call, let me just promise you that listening to this is not going to help you solve bias. it will, God forbid, have a negative effect. So if you want to help your film bias, if you're a woman, please don't listen to this. It's not going to be helpful. Really, it will not be helpful to you. It will not be helpful. And then do not come to me and blame me that something you heard, that after you heard it, it caused you a rift between you and your husband, Chas v'Shalom. Okay? Only speaking to men now. What does it mean to be the husband, to be the man? One of the things it means, okay, I'm not going to use Kabbalistic, Mashpia, Makabal. If you want, no problem. We could talk about it like that. But, I mean, that's essentially what it is. An initiator. Mashpia is the one who initiates. What does it mean to be the initiator? It means that you do not require conditions for being a giver. A makabel requires conditions for being a giver. If you don't give the makabel the stuff that she needs, then she cannot give anything back. She cannot impregnate herself. Okay? I'm speaking spiritual. I'm talking about Zohar and Malchus. So a makabel, if she doesn't get what she needs, she's not going to be able to. You know, you don't put seed in the ground, ground's not going to grow a tree. Just the reality. That's the nature of a makabel. But a mashpia, is the one who initiates, which means that you give without any preconditions. You give without any contingency, without any prerequisites. You give. So I understand very well a husband who says, look, I have certain basic needs, and I'm not even accusing him of being grub. Let's talk about it on an emotional level, okay? He has an emotional need, and he's maybe even feeling not only that the emotional need is not being met, but he feels the opposite. He feels rejection, and it hurts, and he's in pain. I hear you, but you're the man. So you are not going to tell me or yourself that because you're in pain, that therefore you're unable to be the one who's the leader in the home and who initiates emotional energy in the home. Okay. I'm hopeful that this does not sound unrealistic, or it sounds like it's lacking compassion. Again, this is certainly not something from a woman's perspective that she should ever, ever, ever think like. She should never think to herself, hey, you're supposed to be a man. It doesn't matter how you're being treated. You have to, you know, have to be in good spirits. That'll be devastating. But for you, for the man, you have to know. That's what it means to be the man. Being the man means you're the initiator. That means even when nobody is preparing the stage for you, you create the opportunity. And you step forward and you do what you got to do, regardless of what you've been getting or how you've been treated. Now, I'll add a caveat, since I'm talking to who knows who will hear this, how many different people in different situations, that obviously if you come to a point where you feel that you're sense of self-worth and your mental health and your ability to function is suffering because you are literally being starved and you cannot function. Okay, fine. So then that's a serious situation and it has to be dealt with. And this is not the context we're talking about how to deal with it. But what I want to suggest is that we have to be men. And a man can take a whole lot more emotional pain. Not that we wish it on ourselves. And also, let me also add, I'm not one of these old-fashioned guys who says that men have to pretend that they don't feel pain and that men don't cry and that men don't talk about their feelings. For sure not. We do. We do cry and we do feel pain and we do talk about our feelings. Of course, of course. And in kolza, with all of that, at the end of the day, you still have to man up You still have to be the one who's going to bring home the emotional energy. You still have to be the leader. You still have to be the one who's giving time and affection and focus to everybody in the home. And you're not getting what you need to get. Okay, fine. That's part of being the man. If they would tell this to Hassan, would anyone get married? I don't know. Maybe not. But probably this is what they should be telling them. Because I think, you know, now I'm getting into a whole commentary about marriage in general. But I think that young people today, you know, let's talk about the men, just about the men now, go into marriage with the opposite expectation. Not only do they not go into marriage expecting to be the man, but they go in expecting that they are marrying a vending machine. And I don't even mean that in the most grub way, although that too. But they believe that they're getting married in order to receive something, when in truth, when was life ever about receiving anything? It was always about giving. And yes, if it's really about giving, then it's about giving even when your own needs are not being met. Now, if there's a prolonged situation where your needs are severely not met, okay, so that's a dysfunctional situation. That's another discussion. We're not having it here. But what you think you can't tolerate, you can. You can tolerate a lot more than you think you can, and that's called being a man. And it doesn't mean that you're emotionally numb and you're out of touch with your feelings. Get a best friend and cry to your best friend. Get a mashpia that you can cry to. If you cannot cry to your mashpia, you need a new mashpia. Maybe that's the whole purpose of the whole call tonight. If you cannot cry to your mashpia, cry with tears, sobbing. You don't have to make yourself sob, but if you're in pain, if you cannot cry to your mashpia, you need a new mashpia. But you are the man. So, yeah, I hear the question. I hear the question. He's not getting his needs met. How can he give when he's not getting? That's called being the man. Okay.
Okay. Another question that, based on what you said last week, I think just needs a quick clarification. Last week when we were talking about when the husband is afraid of losing his job, and you said something about not sharing the emotion, the practical part, yes, share, and the emotional part, don't share. And could you just elaborate a little bit, what do you mean by the emotional part? If we can't share our feelings,
so
with our
wife, spoke about it, I elaborated. I don't know. I got to say something. That answer was probably 15 minutes long.
Yes.
So maybe the problem was that it was too long. But I think I clearly explained at length that, you know, I gave him a whole prayer about the whole thing, right? That a man's curse is making a living. Women also make a living, right? Holacious Chayil is about a woman who has an Amazon business, right? So what are you talking? What it means is that a man emotionally identifies with the stress, the strain of being the one who has to bring home money. So what I'm saying is, for a man, you may have deeper feelings. By deeper feelings, that means that it actually touches upon your whole identity and self-concept when it comes to frustration with making a living. What I'm saying is that may not be fair to put that on your wife. So whereas you might discuss stresses and strains in life, yeah, like for instance before when he asked the question about somebody who wants to talk about Corona with his wife, and you want to talk about the stress and the strain, fine, talk about it, okay? But there are certain things like when a man has deep, when his whole identity is rocked by insecurity when it comes to tirdas haparnasa, that may not be something that can translate to a woman's language, and therefore either she's not going to be able to support you the way you want her to, or it's just going to burden her. Or maybe that's two ways of saying the exact same thing. So that's what I was pointing out, that when it comes to financial strain, when it comes to financial strain, a man has certain deep identity issues with that topic that may be best discussed with other men, and you will find more compassion from other men and more support from other men.
So what I'm hearing is it's not that you shouldn't discuss emotions and things like that. It's just that particularly in this parnassa aspect, it's better to discuss with other men, but not that you shouldn't discuss emotions with your wife.
And let me flip it. So a couple questions ago, we had a woman whose greatest aspiration in life was not being a mommy, right? So that's a unique woman's issue that a man can never fully relate to. Because just like Adam was cursed with having to make a living, Chava was cursed with having to raise children. Now, obviously, children are a blessing, so they're not a curse. The child's not the curse. But just like making money is not a curse. But the pressure of identifying with the task of making money, of having to look at myself as a money maker, causes a lot of deep stress for a man. For a woman, there are deep identity issues with the stress of being a mommy. That's just the way that it is since the Chetei Tzadas. That's human nature. So that question where that woman had these deep issues about, you know, not feeling so fulfilled, and there are many women who are that way, which there are many men who, by the way, resent having to be breadwinners. And it's a deep issue for them. And they're not going to ever fully get support from their wives because it's just, it's a gender-specific issue. So I'm using that as an example that we're, you know, this husband could be supportive to his wife. I'm saying the woman who doesn't identify so deeply as a mother or as deeply as she may identify with other aspirations, right? That's a deep issue. And I remember I said, I'll quote myself, I think I remember what I said 15, 20 minutes ago, that that's such a big issue that only a Rebbe could really address it, and it's not for a husband to sort that out for her, but at least he can try to be a little bit supportive. Now let's flip it. Let's say the man is dealing with parnassa issues. Again, that's a deep issue. That's, or at least it has the potential to be a deep issue. Let me correct myself. It has the potential to be a deep issue because it's something that men identify with so deeply, in which case, don't put that on another human being, that they should sort that for you. That's a much bigger issue than you're going to find resolution for within the context of your marriage. So, yeah, talk about your feelings, talk about what's going on in life, but also remember that men need male friends and women need female friends, and there are certain things that are gender-specific, like these two examples that we gave. Don't put pressure on your spouse to try to identify with things that are not that are not mutual to, you know, to both male and female. And I told you last week I'm going to be sexist and I'm going to use the traditional gender specific roles, but you know what? This is Torah. This is the reality. There are certain things that are just existential truths. That, you know, whether it's because of our spiritual makeup or ultimately everything's because of our spiritual makeup, because everything's nostalgia from spiritual truths. But the point is, however it came to be, these are realities. So that's all I was referring to. I hope that's understood.
So I think that the way the person understood it is that not to talk about emotions in general. And I think that you clarified it now. It's these kinds of emotions,
I would never
not emotions
say that.
In general.
Right. I don't know how anyone would get such an impression that I would say do not speak about emotions in general. I'm not even sure how that anyone garnered that impression.
Okay, out of context. Okay, one final.
You know what
question.
Happened? The guy's wife listened to the call for him and told him what I said, and that's why he got it out of context.
Last question is that I'm binging on Netflix, not anything bad or anything, just wasting too much
what?
Time. I'm binging on Netflix, he writes, not
Netflix,
anything
okay.
bad or anything, just wasting so much time and I'm tired the next day. My wife is mad and I'm ashamed, but it helps my stress.
Yeah. You know, that's not Corona specific. You know, that's a classic. That's a classic issue, and there's two parts of it. you know, there's I'm ashamed, which that would be true even if she didn't know about it. You're not proud of yourself. You know, you feel, you know, you're wasting your time. You know, what are you on Netflix for? Forget about the fact that it's Netflix. You're in Rambam today, so then what are you even looking at it for? So, yeah, the shame has nothing to do with her. It has to do with himself. Then there's another issue. It bothers her. She doesn't like it. So then, you know, that's a second issue. So there's two parts to this. I think the second one is easier to address than the first one, which is when something bothers somebody else, especially a spouse, we really try as hard as possible to not do it. So I would suggest that as much as you can try to find other ways of relaxing, of edging out, of, you know, I don't want to sound like a nerd here, but, like, go run around the block and, you know, tire yourself out and then take a hot shower and get in bed, right? Okay, it'll help you unwind better than Netflix, okay? But that's that part of it. But let's talk about the internal issue. It has nothing to do with his wife. It has nothing to do with the fact that she doesn't like it. It has to do with the fact, even if she didn't mind it, he doesn't feel good about it. He doesn't like it. That's a much deeper issue. All of us do stupid things all the time. And we know that they're stupid. So why do we do them? But we're not stupid. I mean, that would be the simple answer. We do stupid things because we're stupid. Oh, okay, fine. So then you answer the question. But we're not. We're not stupid. So why do we do stupid things? Because those things work for us. What do you mean it works for me? It makes me ashamed. It makes me tired. I see two ways it's not working for me. Yeah, but apparently it is working for you. On some level, it is. In some way, at some time, it is meeting a need. So, again, you're not a stupid person, so why would you do a stupid thing? Because on some level, it works. And there are different approaches to how to get those things out of your life. But I would suggest that the more permanent way and the deeper way, the realer way, I guess because we're in Chedesh Iyar, so it's Kedai to speak about Ishapcha as opposed to Chedesh Nissen, which is Iskafia. Chedesh Nissen is Yetzias Mitzrayim. We're running away from the evil. So that's Iskafia. I still have all sorts of, you know, I want to watch Netflix, but I don't let myself. That's Iskafia. Iyar is Sfira Sa'ayma, where you're actually cleaning up your midas, you're actually changing. That's Ishapcha. So that's, you know, I don't even want to watch anymore. I mean, maybe on some level, it's technically, I guess it'll be interesting, but no, I don't want to. No, it's not a struggle. You know, if I think about it, to have the idea for a second, I easily push it away because it's like, no, that's not what I really want to do. It's not something that's going to satisfy me. So how do you get to that though? How do you get to that second level? Where you're not white-knuckling, you know, you're not forcing yourself, you're not controlling yourself, you've actually changed yourself. You've changed what you like and what you value. And my answer to that is that there's no substitute for the change. It's a process. Forcing yourself, Scafia, you can do it in 1 second. Just force yourself. And to some degree, you can start with the Iskafia now because, you know your wife doesn't like it. So even when you do it, you'll cut it short, shorter than you would have on your own. And you do it so you annoy her a little bit less. So there you'll have some Iskafia in your life, some white knuckling, some forcing yourself. But long term, there's got to be the changing yourself. And changing yourself means that when you change what works for you. Right now, this is meeting some type of a need. That's why you're doing it. Again, I said, you're not stupid, so why are you doing a stupid thing? Because on some level, it's working for you. It's meeting some type of a need. How are we going to change that? You're going to have to actually change your needs. You're going to have to change your needs. Or change the way that you meet your needs. But that's much deeper work. What does that mean? Let's try to be a little bit more specific here. That means that maybe I need to unwind so much and veg out and numb myself. And that's what happens to be the way that they do it. But, you know, it could be anything. You know, it could be heroin. You know, why not? You know, don't want to give anyone any suggestions. But I'm saying, what does it matter? That's incidental. The point is, I'm having trouble with reality, and I want to escape. So what needs to change is my relationship with reality. What needs to change is not that I'm watching Netflix. What needs to change is the need that I'm meeting by watching Netflix. I have a need to numb myself, to veg out, to escape, because reality is causing me stress. Okay, so I have to change it. I have to change the fact that I'm not dealing well with reality. I need better tools for living. I need a better way to go through my day so that by the end of my day, I'm not craving some mind-numbing outlet. And that's real Avaida. You want to know what Avaida is? Avaida is when you learn Siddhis and think about Siddhis and internalize it in your own words and appreciate life a little bit differently so that you go through your day. This is not the point of Siddhis, but this is definitely a Tetzah, that when you go through your day, you will deal with life. You'll deal with reality more gracefully, more easily, with more dignity, with more class. And you will have less strain. And you will have less need for something mind-numbing at the end of the day. But that's a project. That's a project. So you start right now with what you can do, what you can do right now, which is control yourself, white-knuckle it, and just, you know, force yourself to do what you don't want to do. But that's not the long-term plan. You can't white-knuckle it forever. You can't just have Escafia as your only tool in your toolkit for life. Eventually, you're going to have to change how you're handling life in general. And as that improves, then automatically you'll see that some of the ways you were taking care of yourself in the past, you no longer have the need to take care of yourself in those ways. And then your way of treating yourself will be more in alignment with your current values. Because your values anyway say you don't want to be binging Netflix. That's your values. But your emotional needs are that it helps you, at least on some level. So when you change your capacity for dealing with life, by changing your perspective on life, by learning some chassidus and appreciating infinity and then it just expanding your threshold, expanding your capacities. So then the ways that you treat yourself will become more in alignment with the values that you already hold for yourself.
Real work. And that MSP is going to be part of that.
What was the question?
I said that's real work, and the Mashpia can be part of that.
Oh,
support system can be part
yeah,
of
for sure. For sure. Absolutely. You're going to need to check in with somebody while you're doing that work to make sure that you're being real, and that you're not being too hard on yourself or too gentle.
Right. And the benefit, of course, is that your wife will be happier, but you will be happier if you're aligned, if your actuality is aligned with your values.
Yeah, for sure. And the truth is, you know, it's not for her because you could please her with just pure Escafia, white knuckling. But you'll be happier when you've done a little Isapcha and changed yourself a little bit. And yes, in case anybody's wondering, that is what Chassidus is. That's what it means to be Chabad. It doesn't mean schmaltering. It means learning Chassidus and thinking Chassidus and incorporating those ideas into the way we see life so that we live our lives better.
All right. I think we covered a lot of different aspects. More questions came in, but I think that we covered the corona aspects. There's a lot of men questions, maybe for a whole nother time, of just regular husband questions that's not so corona related or corona inspired. So once again, thank you very much for this call, and I'm on behalf of the wives and husbands of the world. Thank you, and good night.
My pleasure, and again, I hope no women were listening, and another thing is, please understand that I'm in the same boat with all of you. None of this is being said from a. I joke around sometimes because human nature is funny. The word human has come from the same root as humor, which is the same root as humus, which means dirt, because the ogam is from the abdomen. So when you are realistic about human nature and you have humility, and so then you also have a sense of humor and you laugh at yourself. So I just want anyone to know, any jokes I'm making is not has to show them about anyone else. It's about human nature. And every single thing I'm telling you, how do I know any of this? Because it all applies to me. And we're all in the same boat. We're all working towards the same goal. And the Avisha should help. That's it. The Avisha should help.
Amen. Amen. Thank you.
Okay. My pleasure. You're welcome.